Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Why are you pointing at me?
Because it's time for Weird Things!
Oh my god, it's Weird Things time! Well, I'm Andrew Main, that's Brian Brushwood.
Hello. I mean, what else is there to say outside of well met? That's going to be my new way I say, introduce. I'm like, well met, I'm Brian.
Yeah, well played. And that voice you just heard is Justin Robert Young.
Justin, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
I have an obligation to get all the way caught up on The Walking Dead, and I have discovered that it is way easier to watch The Walking Dead while you're in the middle of a Hearthstone tournament.
That's should be a warning sign. Like we've talked about this before. When I watch something, I try to be 100% engaged in what I'm doing and what I'm watching.
Well, like you have different. Like classes of programming, right? There's some stuff that you can put on and then go do other stuff. And then there's like the narrative stuff that you really want to pay attention to. It's like no cone of silence, no eating, no sorting things. It's like this is it.
See, and I want to be that way. But the problem is like once you enter full attention mode, pretty much everything is crap. Like the vast majority of stuff is crap. You're like, this is bad. I'm wasting my time giving this my full attention. Whereas if you have it on while you're doing other stuff, you're like, oh, you know, Multiplicity with Michael Keaton is cute. It's cute. Like, I did not think that when I paid for a ticket to go see that movie, but I did think it when it was on in the background on HBO.
But you just hit the nail on the head. And that's why, like, I don't consume anywhere near as much media as most people because when I do, it's got to be full attention. And then I go, wow, this sucks. And I am very – science says nobody multitasks well. We'll go here, correct. We'll go here, we'll go back and forth. Some of us can convince ourselves that we're multitasking really well, but when you do performance tests and retention and all that, you find out that it just drops, that there is no good multitasker. There's people who convince themselves they multitask well, but their ability to pay attention just suffers. You can only pay so much attention to something at a time. And you can go back and forth. You can maybe be a little, you know, slow part, go do this or whatever. So I'm very, very aware of that. So when I watch stuff, I say, let me get my 100% attention. And that's why I am very, very hypercritical of many things because these things stand out to me. And I can't even – if I'm like I've been using Tinkercad lately, great, you know, 3D design program. I'll listen to an audiobook while I do it, but then I have to stop at certain points because even though I may not be reading something textual, my brain will be going through something and I just can't, you know, pay attention. I'm reading right now Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow.
Oh my gosh, have you never read that before?
Never read it before.
It's so good. It's so good. It talks about like system one and system two, the different mm-hmm. ways that we perceive things. And I'll tell you what, it's Richard Feynman. If you ever read Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, or What Do You Care What Other People Think? During one of those books, he talks about the fact that about like multitasking and juggling things. And he said that he seems to be able to juggle number things at the same time as language things, as long as the two are separate. Mm-hmm. Where I noticed it, and I'm sure I've told this story on some podcast or other, but it's like when I'm working out, the happiest I am is when I'm listening to an audiobook, so my language part of my brain is totally engaged, but I'm playing a symbolic-based puzzle like Drop 7 or you know, any kind of like sorting thing with the hands while I'm working out. So it's like I'm physically engaged, I'm mentally engaged, and I'm emotionally or intellectually engaged. And I find that some games, for example, Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution on the iPad, I have played so much that I don't read the words anymore. And because I don't read the words, I just know, okay, I'm Gandhi. I know what his strengths are. I'm moving symbols to attack other people or whatever. I'm able to play that game while listening to an audiobook and give my full attention to the audiobook. But other games, for example, Hearthstone is in that mushy middle right now where it's like every so often there's enough where it's like, I don't understand this. I have to read the cards that I'll pause the audiobook in order to kind of, you know, grasp everything. Although I have no doubt that within a year, I'll be at a point where it's like, I just see the picture of the, I don't know, the eagle on fire. And I know
if you want to do the thing. Any more evidence why the robots are going to win? Think about when you're driving, looking for a restaurant or looking for an address. What do you do?
When you're driving, looking for an address? I mean, it's like I just look at my phone.
Do you turn down the radio?
Oh, dude, yeah, you remove noise.
Yeah,
sure.
Even though you're a visual, you're like, let me turn down this audio thing. And it's a funny, it's a kind of a funny meme, you know, when you turn down the radio to look. But it really means it's how much bandwidth we've got. Is that we all of a sudden have to dial that down. So, you know, the robots are going to win when they don't have to do that.
It's something that I face every time that I go on the road for the Go game. I have to scout out these game zones, and so I'll listen to a podcast or an audiobook, and I can do – it can be on during my walk, but the moment that I need to write something down or think of something, like, I've just – and it took a while because, like – I almost like I wanted to power through it. I wanted to be like no, I can listen to this and also write at the same time. Like, it doesn't matter. Can't do it. And the only way that I was able to preserve, to have everything go the fastest, is just understand where I got to pause.
Okay, so as long as we're talking about brain science, and normally I know that Andrew drives things, but can I propose to us that we take a moment to talk about what's on the news and has very much to do with brain science? I'm looking at the blank stares. Talking about the Brian Williams misremembering thing.
Well, I was going to make a joke about Brian Williams.
Were you really? No. Can we talk about this? Because this is fascinating to me. Because I had an epiphany. You know, obviously, all three of us are people who have, you know, read a lot of scientific nonsense and skeptical
stuff. Yourself, eggheads.
Yeah. And we are aware of the same thing that causes people to believe fervently in Sasquatch or UFOs or whatever are oftentimes, you know, the malleability of memory, the fact that we can manufacture false memories about wildly important things. And so it's curious to me that that apparently I have an unpopular and controversial opinion in that I 100% absolutely believe Brian Williams when he said, yeah, sorry, my memory got mixed up, and I thought I was on the flight that got grenaded, but I'm not.
Only he knows. And there are characteristics of people who genuinely misremember stuff, but when everything you misremember is ego building, you know, and then the pattern, the SEALs, you know, Navy SEALs, the Berlin Wall, everything, and then you watch him tell these stories and how he tells this stuff. It sounds to me like a lot of, you know, a consistent behavior of a lot of people to want to make themselves to be more important in a situation than maybe they were.
Well, let's pull it back from whether or not it was a crafted position that he's in, because you could definitely convince me, like, he told himself, I'm going to shorten this part for brevity. I'm going to inject myself in the narrative this time that I tell the story or whatever. But what I don't believe is that people believe or is that today he thinks that he's still telling a fib or whatever. People use the word lie rather loosely, and that bothers me, because you can make the decision to shorten for brevity and inject yourself into the narrative 10 years ago, and then now you are living in the product of that, which is you've told the story enough times that you actually believe it.
But there's a difference between shortening the narrative to making yourself the hero of the narrative. That's the big difference to me, is when it goes from let me condense two characters or three characters or events to I'm going to put myself at the center so I am the hero. And you look at him talk about this and use it as an example to try to shut down critics too. Like, I was here and this happened. I was there and this happened. Da, 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 da. And I'm not ruining myself from having done stuff or say like this at all. I do not want to be hypercritical. I do not know. And I don't. But in general, when people are making themselves the hero of the narrative, I'm very suspicious, because that's almost sociological.
Point, Andrew, this is that's more of an indication that there is a gain from it, which would suggest there is a and intelligence behind the crafting of the story.
Exactly.
Right?
So, well, let's do it this way. Like, we agree that the difference between a lie and a mistake is or between a lie and being wrong is whether or not you believe it. And what I don't understand is
I don't know.
I mean, if you believe it and it's not factually accurate, then you're just wrong. It's not a lie, right?
Well, I had a discussion with Penn, of all people, about this because I was trying to go through that difference between somebody who's mistaken and somebody's lying and trying to understand. And one problem is it's internal. It's hard to know. And the other thing is, though, is that like if – and I would encounter this skepticism all the time is I would say like, okay, no, that's not true. And then people would say, yes, it is. Here's this information. No, I will not look at that information. When people are making a conscious effort to avoid fact-checking or avoid discrediting what they're saying, there is some action being taken. What do we call that? I don't know. I don't know if a lie is the right word, but a mistake to me seems to be too
I'm not even saying mistake. I'm just saying wrong. Like, yeah. For example, creationists are wrong. They are incorrect when they say that, you know, by all evidence, they are incorrect when they say that the Earth is, you know, 6,000
years. We would say the evidence does not support that position.
Correct. Speak for yourself, eggheads. Yes.
Okay. So here's my question is, do you right now believe that when Brian Williams says, I was mistaken, I was confused, I had a false memory, do you believe that is a lie, or do you believe that that is the truth? It doesn't matter how we got here. Doesn't matter how many times he stretched the truth. Like, at this moment, when he said those words, because, again, as a tactical thing, Brian Williams is a smart guy. If you're going to try to win over the public, then what you do is you know that the smarter thing to do is to say, you know what, I thought it would help me to shorten this story and fib a little on the nature of blah, 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 blah. Sorry about that. That's what America wanted to hear. But instead, he said the hard thing, which is, I honestly remember it this way. I'm sure it's because memories are dumb and I conflated all this stuff together.
No, the hard thing is to say I made this up because I wanted to be a hero of this narrative, and that's the hard thing. The hard thing to say is I did it out of ego. That's the hard – it may not be the truth, but that's the hardest thing to say.
No. I would disagree. I would disagree because if he did say that, he would suffer none of these consequences.
So hold on. Wait a minute real quick. That's something I talked about on jury. We have a different standard for – journalist that I think on some level is unfair, but they're looked at, news people are looked at as truth bots that just spit truth. And even if they are fed bad facts, for Brian Williams, I'm sure he's come on dozens and dozens of times and apologized for a mistake made in other people's reporting, and nobody gets down on him. But if he were to say, the mouthpiece of this news division, that he willfully created a fake story to be better for himself, that's the end of his job. That's the thing he says before he resigns. Like,
I mean, I guess that's the other thing that freaks me out is that people are like, well, he just needs to tell the truth all the time. And I'm like, is that the standard you hold to all guests of the David Letterman show? Like, what does his day job have to do with it? Is that the case where it's like everyone who goes on David Letterman needs to Google their own stories to double check them before they go on? That seems ridiculous to me.
I don't think that it's necessarily fair, and I think that it's odd to me that if we are to agree that Brian Williams is an egomaniacal fabulist on some level, and you know, he still reads other people's news reports in a soothing tone of voice that pleases people at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, then that to me seems fine. You know, like, I don't have a big problem with that necessarily. You know, but then again, I have probably a different view of what I expect of television journalism in general. But it's like, I think that is – he can't hold on to his job if he says that he lied about this deliberately. Like, that is a self-immolation strategy.
I mean, but again, you know, we all have cocktail party stories that we tell. And the difference is that all of us deny the fact that we are, you know, conflating multiple things into one story, that we're shortening for time, that we're, you know, tweaking the story, and we believe them. Here's what drives me nuts is, and I didn't understand why people got fired up about it until somebody over Twitter said, well, this is obviously a campaign by the left to support one of their own. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh, wait, this is a political thing. And the truth has no bearing on a political issue. Like all of a sudden I realized I just gave up trying to convince anyone. But here's the thing. If you want to believe that this is a left-wing cover-up of your own, then that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. But of all the reasons to believe it, don't decide that he must be lying because there's no way that somebody could think their helicopter got hit by a grenade when it didn't. Because 100% of the science tests about memory and false memory and planting all this stuff says, yes, you absolutely can. There are studies where they show that they cause people to admit that, yes, they committed a felony, even though they totally didn't.
Well, Brian, just are kind of speaking to the pattern is all the other things that have come out whenever he's in a position to talk about himself.
I'm so not interested in that at all. Like what I'm interested in are the people
we're talking about, though. I guess in general, of course, people can have the most amazing made up memories that they absolutely believe are true. We know this to be true. In his instance, and you asked me, do I think he's been sincere or not? I don't know, but I know there is the pattern is of the three or four things they've now caught him in. Every one of them makes him this hero, makes him the center of the narrative in a heroic way. And that, to me, is suspicious.
None of that bothers me. Like that's fine. That is factually accurate as far as a pattern of the behaviors of this individual. What bothers me are people who say, there's no way he could be wrong about this. Like the fact that people aren't even willing to admit that somebody could – have a false memory really bothers me because other people, more important people than Brian Williams, are going to jail, are going to the death sentence, are going to the electric chair because people think things like, oh, well, there's no way somebody's making that up. It's got to be a lie or whatever. Like, can we lose the word lie in this whole thing? Because that's what really bothers me.
I mean, again, anyway, that gets to the heart of, you know, it's hard to tell what's a lie and what's – because it's inside what goes on in person. And I think that in a position where your job is, in theory, the difference between here where we call them journalists as opposed to newsreader is that the idea is that we think they should be invested in the truth. Dan Rather still insists – the memo, the letter, the obviously faked.
Yeah.
And sure. That's coming out as a movie where he's like the hero of the narrative, because there's a lot of people that kind of, you know, that say, well, maybe the intent was right. Well, a lie is a lie is a lie.
By the way, go back and read that whole situation. Like that has not aged well as we have continued to move along in internet fact checking. Like that whole situation would have been torn up by Reddit in like 0.25 seconds if it were to happen today. It was the most basic of online forgeries.
I think that we have two problems. One is that we don't challenge enough when people present what they think happened and we know them to be wrong or incorrect or whatever, unless it's somebody on the diametric opposite political point of the sphere or cultural point of view. That's the only time we criticize when it's, you know, we saw this with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who had said some things that did not mesh with what was historically accurate or whatever. And the far right criticized him, but people, you know, who were invested in truth on the left were rallying to his defense. So that's problem number one, is we don't. We're more likely to criticize the other side than bolster our own by trying to figure out how to get rid of the weak spots. The second part is that we don't leave enough room, as you point out, for no. I genuinely misremembered this. I genuinely thought it happened this way. This is the way the story told me. Whatever. And I think there needs to be an understanding of that. There needs to be this sort of like, okay, I forgive you. I think you're sincere. If there's a pattern of this, then I'm going to be suspicious. But I think these kind of things like this, and I am for, I think, on both sides. We need to be more critical, but we also need to be more understanding. You know, and you see this a lot where you get somebody who is very progressive, very, very open-minded, and who does something stupid, either sexist or racist or whatever, and it's not part of a pattern of what they've done. But for that one thing, you know, it's like, let's get out the pitchforks, let's burn them at the stake. I'm like, let's have room for forgiveness.
Well, okay. So if we're looking for kind of a consensus area, you know, the Venn diagram where everyone's on the same page, I don't care if he did intentionally, you know, aggrandize his part in the story or not. But are we all on the same page in that we had the argument that, well, seems to me like you either know if you got hit by a grenade or not. There's no way you could not get hit by a grenade but think you were. Like, that's the argument that drives me nuts, because that's wrong, wrong, wrong. Every single scientific study says that it's wrong, wrong, wrong. I'm pretty sure I could convince you right now.
Every single scientific study? Every single scientific study?
Okay, all right. The consensus.
What about the Justin Robert Young scientific study of proving Brian wrong for the sake of an argument that I've just published on Twitter?
Fair enough.
Brian, I agree. I think that to say that you cannot – you know, is inconceivable. I think that it is. There's absolutely, we know you can be convinced of anything and everything. And that's the
only part that drives me nuts is the people who are relying at the end of it on their intuition. And as we all know, the intuition is the far more or far less reliable of the two systems.
Don't let it drive you nuts.
Okay, it's all very difficult.
Oh, it's gonna knock on a door. But wait. Hold on. That's Patreon knocking at the door.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, is that money knocking on the door?
Open up the door. What's behind that door?
Patreon.com/weirdthings is what's at that door. At 404 patrons kicking in almost two-thirds of our goal of $1,000 an episode. Thanks to everybody kicking in money to keep us independent and regular. We're regular like we were using Metamucil every day.
Hell yeah. 414 patrons, Brian. If you want to support us, go ahead on over there, patreon.com/weirdthings. Thank you guys for helping us. We are making those rounds, making it all the way up to $1,000, where we'll be able to continue to pay our fantastic producer, Bryce Neshcom, who is been a huge boon to the show. So thank you everybody for helping us out.
Absolutely.
And one of the perks you get, it can be considered a perk, maybe not, maybe it's
a curse.
You get on the weird list. The weird list is the periodic, sometimes multiple, sometimes like 6-7 times a day, I'll be sending out weird things I find. You may not want it. You may not need it.
It's a little bit like lycanthropy, if I'm not mistaken, where it's like on the one hand, you get to be like really powerful on the full moon. On the other hand, you're definitely a werewolf.
Yeah, there's that. That we want to get to the point, if we hit our, I think at the 1,000 mark, we're going to be able to do a once a week, one of us will hop on a Google Hangout and be able to do more of a free form chat for a while. We're going to make that happen. So good things will happen, folks.
Absolutely.
Oh, wait, Justin, there's not any door.
Wait.
Oh, hi.
Oh,
who's there?
Larry Page. It's Larry Page knocking on your door.
Wait, Larry Page?
Page? The former Wunderkind, who created the tech behemoth Google. What are you doing here, Larry Page?
Well, Justin, you know, I'm fabulously wealthy.
Hell yeah, you are.
You know, Tim Cook, he's over there, Cupertino, building the big mothership, which we're thinking may actually be a spaceship. You know, nothing would surprise us. Okay. And they're up to some other stuff there. We'll talk about that actually as sort of another weird thing segment here. But, you know, my buddy Elon's building rocket ships and stuff. And I've got the Google X Labs. I've got AstroTeller, you know, working on some crazy stuff. You know, we've got robot cars and stuff. But, man, they don't need me. I mean, I tried the Google Glass thing, tried to get people excited about it. And it'll have its day. But, you know, Justin, I want a frontier. I want to do something. I've got a couple days free. I've got $1 million. What are we going to go do? What are we going to go do, Justin? I want you to be my Sherpa for weird and for adventure.
Number one, Larry, you mean like me? Like it's a really poor use of your time. Like that, there is a million other very, very smart people that I don't think. I mean, literally, I spent 6 hours today playing Hearthstone. Like, it's really –
Settle down there. You're not the only door. I'm maybe going around knocking on a few doors, okay? So don't get too full of yourself here, okay? Just settle down. And my Segway broke down in the neighborhood. My monkey toe shoes, you know, ripped open on me. So I'm at your door. All right. So I want you to think about this. And Brian, you're going to get the same question too, because I'm hopping on a plane to Austin. I'm going to ask you, listen, if I had like, I have a couple million bucks to spend, anything, what would we go explore? James Cameron went to the deep of the ocean, went to the deepest part of the ocean. This is a guy that made Avatar, okay, and Piranha too. He went all the way down there. I want an adventure. I want an adventure now, and I want you to figure out what we're going to do.
You want a personal adventure. Like, not necessarily like a new frontier for Google to explore, but rather a like personal
Larry
adventure.
Larry Page knocking on your door, not Larry, Sergey, and Eric, okay?
Hey, Larry, real quick, just so I have my head straight, like, do you want to make a lot of money?
I cast a 2-2, a Brushwood Minion.
Hi, I'm here on behalf of Justin Robert Young. Do you want to make money on this adventure, or do you want to have your own good time?
Yeah, because that's I'm hard up for cash.
Okay,
yeah,
all right. So we're not gonna go
right because you know I need no. I don't need to make money. I want to blow money. I want to spend my crazy money on some amazing, cool thing. Maybe like if you knew where Bigfoot was, we'd go try and find Bigfoot. Get some helicopters, some high powered rifles. We'd go do that. That's what I'm asking you guys. I listen to the Weird Things podcast. You guys talk about all these weird scenarios.
Listen, now that I've been cast into existence, I need to speak with my player, Justin. Sidebar.
Well, you're going to get a different knock on your door.
Sorry, but regardless, the 2-2 version of Brian.
All right,
still
I'm
going to
go away. For 30 minutes.
Okay,
go
good.
To Starbucks.
BRB.
Justin can call whoever he wants. I recommend Google Hangouts, by the way. You can use that to call whoever you want.
Got it. Justin, wait, man, we got to show this guy a good time.
I'm still here, guys.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Would my you, Android would you, phone looking would, for the nearest Starbucks, okay?
Shh. Justin, we got to show this guy a good time.
Yeah, we do. Larry, just leave. Like, just go. Like, we're trying to talk.
Way too sexual, guys.
I mean, it's like he's been to every strip club, I'm sure, right?
I mean, if he hasn't, then it's not his thing. Like we gotta give. Like, all right, so let's look at the genre for which we're playing in.
Sure.
Can you mention Cameron? Cameron likes to James fancy Cameron, himself.
He explores. He goes to the bottom of the sea.
Right. Richard Branson was his own little daredevil
always,
with the hot air balloon
hot air
around the world.
Around buying Virgin Galactic.
But there's a lot of – and then somebody else in Google, a Google employee just broke the record for that Felix Baumgartner skydiving thing. So.
Yeah, which by the way, let's talk to that guy's PR agent because nobody remembers his name, but we all remember Felix Baumgartner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Sijak, I kind of felt like that was just his own. Like he just sent – a middle finger emoji to Felix Baumgartner, that was just an FU to him.
That was a personal thing.
Latte, yeah. Soy milk, grande, thanks. Okay.
Okay, Larry, wait. The children are
I'm
talking over
street,
here,
but I'm telling you to hurry up.
Okay, listen.
All right. So we need to think of something that is never been done.
Yeah,
that's a huge part of it for these kind of guys.
Yep.
Super gigantic visibility, and now brands Larry Page forever as the big crazy daredevil guy.
I mean,
in the way
like
that
you,
Cameron
you,
and Branson,
you got to go like the highest or the lowest or the fastest. Maybe we could pitch him on the slowest. Like the slowest man in history?
Nobody wants to be the slowest man in history. Fastest though.
Okay.
Now we're talking.
You want to send them faster? Like how fast? Yeah, maybe fastest. Fastest in the air, flying around the earth.
Whoa! Slow down, Uber driver. I want to look at all the weird sights of Oakland.
Oh man, he's almost there, dude. Listen, real quick.
Right, how about this? Fastest. I mean, what is the fastest? Maybe there's some build your own plane situation or something that shows ingenuity.
Oh, dude, longest self-powered flight, some kind of throw him on a solar-powered butt that he flies around.
Since I have 40, these legs cramp up a lot. That's why I'm Ubering around.
All right, let's say, hey, Larry, come in.
Hey, what do you got, guys?
Larry, listen, man, we think that you are a pioneer. We think that you're better than everyone else.
Yeah.
We'd like to see you go on the longest solar-powered glider flight of all time.
Larry, it's about time that when people think Page, they think that Page ranks number one.
Yeah,
going fast around the world.
We kind of want to work on your Page rank is what we're saying.
You guys know that I own my own airplanes. I own an airfield with NASA. When I fly, I don't just fly first class. I fly on my own plane, and you want to put me inside of a tin can and send me around the world with, you know, like freeze-dried food?
All right. All due respect, Larry, we're kind of the experts, and you're not. But that's fine. You don't like the air? That's great. What about underwater?
Well, I go to Google experts. Oh, wait, we shut that down. Okay, maybe you are. I have no way of knowing right now.
Well, I mean, like, but wait a minute. So, yeah, but, like, what if you are the fastest around the world in a plane of your own design? That shows that you are not only a daredevil, but you're a brilliant engineering mind, the likes of which that the world has never seen.
Guys, I could go ask Astro over at X Labs and all that for this. I came to you for weird and stuff, and I, you know, I dropped some hints. Like, you know, like I'm sure if I went to that Andrew Main guy, okay, you know, he would say something like, well, do you want to go catch, like, the largest great white shark ever caught, like a monster shark? Or, you know, there's this croc in Africa.
I'm sorry, Larry, I'm on the line with Andrew Main right now, and he's suggesting that we go capture a sea monster. Would you like to go capture a sea monster?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm also on the phone with Andrew Main. He says, I'm a big, fat, stupid head. Man, I'm so smart. Anyway, I hung up on Andrew. He's useless. I say you go capture a gigantic croc while it's being eaten by a great white shark.
Would you like to genetically engineer any superior animal of some
variety? We got a couple weeks to work in, guys. If you know how to make that work, that's cool. I'm looking for something like, listen, just between us, okay?
Yeah.
You know who's kind of a hero of mine? And this is not leave this room. And I'll have you murdered. I will.
I believe you.
Remember Tom from MySpace?
Yeah. He's gone.
Okay. Vladimir Putin, you know, the guy's riding horses shirtless. He's wrestling tigers and stuff, you know. I'm kind of looking for something, you know.
I got it.
What?
Larry Page. It is a known fact that swimming below the briny depths, there are beasts that have never been seen in full. Tentacles and claw marks from gigantic squids have been seen on whales washed ashore that people have never seen the full size of it. Larry Page, you will be the man to kill the first and largest giant squid, the likes of which is in the New York Museum of natural science.
As your advisor,
cut off its head in Mountain View and keep it on. And you're gonna have to build.
No, I like this because
so huge
right now
head is really on your wall.
We're into like preservation of sharks. We're worried about like overfishing sharks, but giant squids probably eat baby sharks.
Okay,
we can spin this.
Justin, listen.
Yeah,
I just listened to the 99.
He was into that, man. Why did he have to? You're crapping on all my ideas, man.
Real quick, Justin, here's the problem. As I just listened to 99% Invisible, where they did a live performance of the Wild Ones, and there was a conservationist who had the same idea. He wanted to preserve the buffalo before they were gone, so he went out, and his job was to kill a bunch of buffalo and stuff them so they at least have something to hold on to. He realized that was a bad idea. Let's ixnay on the illing K, and instead, let's just, you know, throw them into, like, did you see the preview for Jurassic World? We could have, like, a crazy squid in a giant bucket, and everyone can, like, gawk at it. How about that?
So, wait, you're saying capture the squid?
Well, yeah. I mean, don't kill it. That's going to history will look bad on you.
No. Hey, like, does it look bad on Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes. It looks very bad on Teddy Roosevelt because he definitely killed a lot of animals.
Man, you show me. Show me somebody aside from somebody living in my house.
Okay. But
that on murdering animals for sport.
Wait. No. See, like Teddy Roosevelt, the rumor is that there was a cute little bear and he spared it. He didn't want to shoot it. But people don't realize the rest of that story is they took it back and then stabbed it with a knife and slaughtered it. I mean, they killed that bear. The teddy bear is based on a lie. Don't be that guy.
Was it a lie or did Teddy Roosevelt misremember it?
That Larry Page severed the head of the world's largest largest squid, and they will all cower in his great and terrible might. All right,
yeah, you know what? You are the one who summoned me into existence, Justin Robert Young, so I'll back your play. Larry Page, we recommend you slaughter a beast from the depths and wear the head as a crown.
All right,
of
wait
a giant
minute.
Squid.
I got a little twist. You capture it, okay, and you bring it to New York City, where you put it on display in a Broadway show, the likes of which the Great White Way has never seen.
I mean, you got to go to Skull Island to get yourself the biggest. I mean, everybody knows that's where the biggest
land squids,
krakens are. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. So, Larry, what do you think about this this squid plan?
I'm into it. I like it. I think it's a great idea. I love the idea of trying to capture the largest one, because there have been attempts to try to photograph it and document it, but with my not inconsiderable resources, I think we can make this work.
Awesome. Well, so when do we start? What do you need me to do?
I don't know. Just tell me where to write my checks.
It's BRIAN at SHW. You write a check. Oh, well, I'm sorry. There's somebody. Hello. Hello. Hi, Justin Robert Young's house. I'm the minion.
Hi, I just saw Larry leaving. My name's Jeff Bezos.
Oh, Jeff Bezos.
Oh, B-Dog.
This is a Three's Company episode. How do all these billionaires keep finding my apartment?
Incredible, amazing adventures.
Hey, we're here for you, buddy. What can we do?
You tell me.
flying around the world in a plane of your own design.
How about this? What if you were to deliver me PlayStation 4 controllers on a Sunday? That would be like amazing. Except, oh, wait, you did that today. That was amazing, the way something arrived on a Sunday.
Isn't it? gentlemen, change of topic here. We're going to play a little mystery here. I like your answer, but I think going after a giant squid or a giant octopus or something like that is kind of cool. So there's this photographer. His name's Chris.
Chris Anderson?
No.
Chris Roberts?
Anderson was awesome, by the way. He got punched.
Chris got punched?
Yeah, this guy Chris, this Chris photographer, he got punched.
Did he get punched by a human?
No.
Oh, shit. All right. So what point was this in Florida?
No.
Okay. Was it in America?
Good guess there.
All right. Was it a kangaroo?
No.
It had to be an ape, right? It was an ape of some variety?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, Justin, in which situation does a dude named Chris get punched by an ape, which, by the way, I'm already 100% all in on this story?
It just sounds like a folk song, doesn't it?
He got punched by an ape because he dangled out some oatmeal. And that old ape, he didn't think that oatmeal was real. So he punched him in the face and took his Polaroid, shoved it in his ace.
I'm going to send you a photo of the shot.
Oh, man.
And then there's a story behind it, though, okay?
Which, by the way, just to wrap things up, Larry Page, did he ever capture that sea creature or no?
I don't know. We'll see. It hasn't happened yet, Brian. Why would you want me to lie to you and make up something and then later on?
Kind of.
So you're getting the image. This photo is from the Caters News Agency. You got punched.
So Chris got punched.
And we got a photo of the shot as it's about to happen, which is probably the most terrifying thing, you know.
Oh, geez, Louise. Holy crap. Okay, so I don't know that I'll be able to – I'm just going to hold it up for the audio viewers.
Here, I'll send you
I want you to see, audio viewers, that essentially it's before the actual punch, but we are not talking about like a capuchin or something.
My good God.
Yeah, we're looking at like a silverback, and it's like it's not in mid-punch. It's like he's rearing back as if he's Popeye – gonna give like four or five rotations before he sends you to the spinach moon.
Dude, that one looks like a 1-3 with taunt.
I take it. It's a silverback patriarch. It's, we have it bad. Yeah, man. I'm terrified. I don't know what that would be like.
So he got punched, but there is another circumstance beside him being around the ape. Why did the ape punch him?
I would imagine because he was teasing the ape, right?
No, he's taking photos.
God, I can't.
All right, look at it has to be just a simple territory thing, right? Like, you know, you're just too close to stuff. What's amazing about this photo is how much it just looks like a dude was just like, why I oughta?
I mean, it's like, okay. This might as well have been shot in Queens.
Here's the thing. Let's imagine a hypothetical friend. We'll call him Anthony, okay?
Yeah.
And you get a call Monday morning, and Anthony said, man, I got a black eye.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, how'd it happen? He'd said, there's a fight, right? What would you assume took place? What would you assume that happened before that?
It would be over a girl, right? This is like a bar brawl where it's like apparently I'm going to say that the photographer took too many photos of a female ape.
Let's back it up though. What is anytime you have a friend that gets in a fight or gets in a fight, what is there almost always involved?
Well, I mean, I say girls, alcohol. But apparently I'm wrong.
What'd you say, Justin?
Alcohol.
The person who threw the punch was probably.
Is this a drunk gorilla?
This is a drunk gorilla.
Are you kidding me? This is amazing. Oh my God. This is, can this be our new mascot? We'll call him.
He's called Punches, the drunk gorilla who punches photographers.
Yes.
So this is what this is. These gorillas, they sit up on the mountainside and they eat bamboo stems, which then ferment in the stomachs, producing alcohol.
Oh my God. What? That's fantastic.
So wait, it's like it's booze that brews in your stomach?
Booze brews. Yep.
That's insane.
We're going to eat a bunch of food.
In the animal kingdom, there's a lot of like, berries and other stuff that ferments and gives them a buzz. Like even humans, like we naturally produce a little bit of alcohol from our stomach bacteria.
And so wait, so they like just get, I mean, like anybody else on, you know, drunk, like gets aggressive and stupid and violent and stuff like that?
Yep.
So what is the fruit or food or
bamboo stems?
Bamboo stems. I'm sorry, I'm busy trying to think of a Blues Clues parody that involves like booze brews.
So Brian, here's the thing: is so a silverback. The photographer are taking photos. He says the ape just threw a punch, knocked him aside, and then he dashed through the vegetation past me towards a blackback male behind us who looked to be interested in one of his females.
So say he was just lucky somebody was hitting on his girls.
It had alcohol, it had women, time. It had all the elements for this.
Dude, this was 4 a.m. at every, you know, last call at every bar in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Like, holy this is cow. Happening, you know, like every night. Just roll down to Fat Cats.
I just think if any one of my friends back there, if I hear like, oh, I got a fight or whatever, I'm like, what bar were you at? You know, it's inevitable. I'm not, you know, they don't have to be drunk. Somebody was drunk. Somebody was drunk. That's what happened.
Exactly. This is amazing. This is such an amazing photo. Like, it's so good. And it just is like such the behavior of you know, some drunk weirdo at a bar who's just like looking for a fight.
I'll tell you what, next time you get into a creationist argument, just hand them this. They're like, hey, man, I didn't come from no ape. You're like, well, look at this. Tell me that's not you last Thursday.
Now, like, this. So the guy's okay, because it seems like this animal, that's a powerful creature. He could wreck a dude.
And by the way, for the video watchers, it took me a while to realize that this over here is another ape. Yeah, like this is the reared back fist of a freaking 400-pound beast who's going to smack you.
I mean, like, if that dude is not seriously injured, it seems like he was just trying to knock him aside, right? Because, like, from that position – That's some serious damage that could be wielded if he goes full bore.
All right, gentlemen, we have time for one more before picks.
Sure.
So this is a rumor. I don't believe this is true, but I really want it to be true. And this is the story started from Avra Miller is writing a book. Avra Miller is a technologist. She's worked – where did he work for? I think he did work for Microsoft? I'm trying to remember, let me look up Abram. But anyhow, he put this out there as a speculative fiction, but some people thought that maybe there was something more to it because he's writing a book that's basically a past history of everything that happened in technology. And then Robert Cringely ran with this and then said, hey, I think there's something behind this or whatever. Maybe there's some elements to truth. And it sort of blew up and it came very, very big. But it started from a guy who says, hey, maybe I know some things, maybe I don't. And what it was is he said that when Google decided to do Android, to do their Android phone, that Apple and Steve Jobs in particular felt very, very betrayed by that, particularly because Eric Schmidt at the time was on the board of directors at Apple, and then all of a sudden to find out they had this phone project running at Google, whatever. And there was a lot of you know, personal issues going on there. And in any event, story is that Jobs was very upset by this and then decided that if Google was going to get into phones, then Apple was going to get into search, and that Apple launched their own private secret project to create their own search engine. Okay, and we obviously know that they're interested in search. That's what Siri does. Siri's involved in search, and Siri's, you know, trying to do that. It has its approach towards it. Google has their own. Microsoft has theirs. Search is a very, very, very big part of that. So it makes sense that there is some sort of initiative, but eventually that Apple wants to unveil their own search thing. And if they do, half of all mobile traffic in the United – or smartphone traffic in the United States, internet traffic is on iOS devices, which would mean if they switch it automatically over to Apple, it would be a big blow towards Google. Be a very, very big blow towards Google. The story is – what got the most interest though was that Abram was joking or insinuated that Steve Jobs, before he died, made one last video describing this search tool that Apple was going to unveil, and that at sometime this year they were going to show this video, this one more thing from the now deceased Steve Jobs revealing Apple's own initiative in search.
Okay.
And it's based in part on some technology from some Israeli startup that was supposed to make it better or whatever. But anyhow.
I mean, number one, I do not put it past Steve Jobs to be the kind of person who would plan on a one more thing after his untimely demise. However, there's no way it would be seen nowadays in the context in which he hoped it would originally go, right? It would look like just opportunistic scavenging, right?
It depends on how you think he wanted it to originally go, knowing that he is who he is. And I think he had a very good idea of what his own standing was and understanding that it would be a gigantic sentimental, move for them to make. Also understanding that is done completely out of spite because he is on record to his own biographer while he was dying saying that he wanted to wage thermonuclear war against Google for Android. Like, it would be petty. It would be mean. It would almost be playing dirty. And I think those are all things that he considered to be on the table when dealing with Google, with how pissed off he was.
And side note, we had heard back in that era when that book came out that Steve Jobs said, man, Apple could even make a car. Now Wall Street Journal is reporting there are 1,000 Apple employees working on a car. So the idea that they have a search product, a Google killer search product, which Google killer is a big, strong word, but anyhow, it's phrased. We absolutely believe they're working on their own search thing, so they don't have to depend. Absolutely. But is there a video somewhere of that?
By the way, this is the reaction when Google heard the phrase Google killer.
Yeah.
It was a silverback gorilla with his fists drawn.
Listen, DuckDuckGo is pretty good. Just the name. I won't use it because of the name.
I'm not.
Remember Kuehl? Hey, you guys remember Kuehl?
I'm not going to bet against Apple on anything. That's my new policy. I don't bet against Google. I don't bet against Apple.
Oh, they're amazing companies, both. I'm excited by what they're all doing. But I want to get to the idea that this posthumous video, because then we get into the idea of the Harry Seldon-like idea of Jeff Bezos, Larry Page, all these guys. Right now, Larry Page and Sergey, they're investing heavily in longevity research. They have a company which, you know, they have Calico, they've invested other stuff to try to make 100 the new 60. There's a lot of money being spent towards helping you live longer. But also, at some point, it comes down to, well, maybe I can create this sort of algorithm that is my legacy. Maybe I can create this sort of thing to go do that.
I mean, you know, I'm like unrepentantly all for that. Like, just like I'm convinced that me, Brian Brushwood, the physical being, will die like in 20 minutes. However, I hope that my pattern of interpreting the world around me could live on through some kind of algorithm. And I'm 100% behind that.
Oh, my. I just had an amazing, beautiful vision of the future.
All right.
Every time that Apple does something, good or bad, we hear the hot, easy take from every tech columnist that says, Steve wouldn't have done this. Steve would have done something different. Yeah. What if we have a, maybe it's not like, you know, not a photorealistic, you know, talk to it, Turing test kind of thing, but it is just enter in facts and in text form, it would be, yeah, no, I would have done that. That's pretty much the way I would have done it. Like, you know,
it's only two things.
Maybe a little bit different, but you know, but we would know for a fact that Steve Jobs either would or would not have done something.
It's an algorithm where you type in all the vectors and it gives one of two answers. It either says totes would have or pfft. So yeah. Whatever it is, it's like a totes would have or pfft.
Or yeah, in Steve speak, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yes. By the way, Apple now closed Friday at a stock market cap of $740 billion.
That's like more than a pizza, right?
You're $10 billion away. If you're going to round up, you're a trillion-dollar company.
Wow.
Well, and also – like, it's starting to pass, like, actual countries in terms of, like, how much money they have. Like Scandinavian, like, countries we've heard of. Like, it's not just, like, random, republics in the corner of the world, you know?
Yeah.
This is, like, when you make more money than an entity that can imprison and shoot people for not paying you, you are doing something right. You have created a unique and amazing company.
Well, I mean, you're certainly doing something popular. Whether or not you're doing something right is a question for a different episode.
Well, we live in this very interesting age because now you have Google, which is about half the value of Apple, but not a tiny amount, hundreds of billions of dollars. And they own search. They are a search monopoly. They own search. Nobody's a credible threat to them on search. And so they're in a very, very good position. And they're spending money left and right. You see the latest Boston Dynamics video of another four quadruped robot. By the way, I'm waiting for a CSI episode where they show up at a robot's lab and they've all been stamped to death. They've all been stomped on. You know, like, I don't know what happened here. Oh, there's a four-legged robot cowering in the corner.
Yeah, by the way, I was surprised to see
I am not a murderer.
I was surprised to see that make the rounds on the nightly news circuit, given that like it's literally the exact same design as we saw 3-4 years ago, only it's, you know, electrical instead of gas-powered. And because it's slightly quieter, suddenly it's news again. I don't know.
Look at Brian just throw out 3 years of hard research into this thing.
I mean, it's on nightly
news because it's amazing video.
That's what surprises me is that normally nightly news are the folks who are sensitive to, we've already seen this before, this is not new. Like the visuals are literally identical. It's only the fact that you're minus the four-cylinder lawnmower motor in the background.
I think it's the size of the thing, and it also it makes it look less like a big piece of industrial machine, and I'm watching a video of it walking right now. Spot. Do you have the link? It's walking through an office, Brian.
Yeah, no, that's fine, but it's like it's virtually identical from.
What will it take to please you, Brian?
Find the largest squid in the ocean and bring it to me.
The headlines are all like this quadruped could take a kick, and it's like we saw that 4 years ago. I don't understand it.
Yes, for anybody who was following it, as closely as we have, is certainly an iterative.
But including like this is the same footage that was shown on the news. 5 years ago, in March 2010, this exact same thing. It's like, here's the big dog doing its thing, and you can see it get kicked, and then and it does the same thing. And here we are 5 years later, and the headline is the same freaking headline, man kicks robot dog again. It's like, well, what's different? It's like, oh, no, 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 but it's electric now.
Spot looks a lot – one, Big Dog's amazing. It's made, but, you know, Spot looks like a dog. It, you know, it looks like a dog. And you watch this thing running side by side next to people. They got two of them. It's amazing. It's an incredible improvement. And to see them walking up there, I mean, it's just – I think –
I mean, look, maybe I'm wrong and you guys are right, and this is a totally new, different thing, and it deserves freaking out, even though it's been half a decade since we watched the first version of this. But I
Listen, bro, I'm not saying that you're wrong, right? Like, I'm more explaining why I think people are excited about it. Like, I'm not saying that it's the newest thing on the planet. I'm saying, like, why people are you know, why people want to see it on the nightly news, or why news directors are putting it on their shows.
I mean, I agree. It's like, it doesn't matter how many times this story's been done before. It makes sense to.
But it's not. It's a sufficiently more advanced piece of technology than what we had before. I mean, it is they reduced the size of. They went from having to put a gas motor in there to an electric. I mean, the technological leaps were made, to me, are very impressive.
Yes. And by that logic, yes, if on the news they were saying, like, can you believe it's electric now and not gas powered, that would be great. But that's not one of the headlines.
Put
said
it on because it's great footage. It's a reason to show another cool robot. You know,
for the record, I think we're having a conversation about a fantasy television news program that I have not seen. Like, I don't know what we are what in specific with the television news idea. Like, I don't know how they presented it or why they put it there. Like, I have no clue.
Well, like, right now, if you type in robot dog, you'll see.
Never gonna believe this.
No. Like the first thing it says is it cruel to kick a robot dog? Number one story on CNN two days ago. This is literally the same demo that they showed 5 years ago, but this is what the news cycle is latched onto, is the fact that they show someone kicking a robot dog and it recovering. It's a 5 years old technology. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's totally different nowadays because it's electric and not gas powered.
Well, I think
Boston Dynamics thinks so.
Certainly, I think it was cool then. It's cool now. It's cool video for people to do it. And also, it's a different – it is a different situation because we didn't know what Boston Dynamics was at the point where the big dog hit. Now it is a Google company, which carries with it different implications. You know, like, now it's Google making this robot and not, you know, some MIT – folks in Boston.
Yeah.
Gentlemen. Like
that, in terms of it being a news story, I think that does, beyond the prototype, that does change how people talk about it.
I mean, I honestly think they're having the exact same conversation that a smaller group of people had 5 years ago. I think that it just hit at a better moment in the news cycle this time.
Dog bites man.
Robot dog gets kicked over by man.
Robot and emerges from robot.
So when the robot overlords listen to this podcast, I want them to be very clear that Justin and I were very upset about it being kicked and thought that should be newsworthy, should be called attention to for the cruelty there. Brian was totally cool with it.
Oh, dude, I supported it. I don't understand why they didn't finish the job the first time. First time we went to go kick a robot dog, we should have just kept going and dog dad and killed it right off.
The views of Brian Brushwood do not reflect the podcast. So anyhow, gentlemen, let's do some picks. Who wants to do some picks? Got some
picks? I'm going to call dibs because I'm afraid you're going to steal mine. I'm reading Bold by Diamandis and what's his name?
Stephen Kotler.
Kotler, and it's the sequel to, or it's along the same lines as Abundance. You've heard me talk about Abundance before. I did the audiobook. I will be the first to admit that the reading of the audiobook, a little bit subpar for the Audible experience. However, the content, I think, is exquisite and very forward-thinking. If you want to ruminate on a big idea and wonder how you can change the world by leveraging the changing landscape of what's possible in a world where bandwidth processing and manufacturing are essentially becoming free. It's a good book to get you thinking in that way.
Yeah, I think we'll pick up on some of that for After Things too.
Agreed.
Justin, do you have a pick?
I really like this show Better Call Saul. It has this this guy, Bob Odenkirk, and he's reprising a role that you might have seen on the show Breaking Bad. It's on AMC. I think the first two episodes are available on AMC.com that you can watch for free. So go ahead and check it out. It really – it's kind of reshaped my thinking on – you know, I think – I don't know if we talked about it on – oh, no, it was on Night Attack, so we didn't talk about it here. It's kind of made me rethink when we talk about the great showrunners of the modern golden age of television, including David Simon and David Chase, you know, that none of them have tried to do another show in that same universe that feels so much like the original, and I think kind of succeeds on a different level. I mean, it helps that Bob Odenkirk is just – you know, perpetually, I think, more talented than anybody kind of thinks he is, because he's so funny that his dramatic chops, I think, are often overlooked. But it's great work here. You know, it's very, very good. I thought the first try to watch the first two episodes together, because the first episode is very much a precursor for the very Breaking Bad-esque sort of punctuation of the second episode. But I'm super pumped to watch it, and also a big shout out to our own favorite person in the world, Jackie Hearn, who, along with Rick Foster, is doing a fan cast called Lawyer Up. So if you dig the show, then dig that podcast as well.
Heck yes. And I definitely double down on the watch them side by side, because if you watch the first one by itself, it's like it's a bunch of nothing. Although I do want to say,
wow.
Well, no. I mean, just by itself, you could tell it's all, you know, the layout.
I love the first one.
I mean, all right.
I got on board with this faster than I got on board with Breaking Bad. Let me put it that way.
Wow, interesting.
I love the. We could in a spoiler environment. I could go on and all the little details and things they put in there that not in the, just in storytelling. And I go, man, this is the Batman Begins of Saul. This is a great start. But yeah, I'm gonna back up. I like it a lot. I think that I was super skeptical when they said they were going to do Better Call Saul. I was like, because there was – went through the cycle. Like, maybe it'll be a half-hour sitcom. Maybe it'll this. And I'm like, to take this character and totally change these things in that way, I really wasn't going to be on board for. And what they did, how they did this, very much into it. He has a character that, like, I am going to be – I'm much more interested in this journey than seeing him get to where he gets to.
So, yeah, man, real quick, one to watch – and we'll see whether or not they use it appropriately or squander it. But the actor Michael Mondo was in Orphan Black, and he also played one of the villains in Far Cry 3, Voss. I hated his character in Orphan Black. I still haven't finished the series, but he just was weaselly and weak. Whereas the character he played in Far Cry 3 is utterly terrifying and completely psychopathic. And it seems like what you're seeing him do in Better Call Saul is
– who is he in Better Call Saul?
He's the one who talks sense into Tuco and then later shows up and introduces to Saul like, hey, man, I'm going to go get that money.
No, he sounds like he's – and that's a great – you know, what Better Call Saul I think has done is cool is you got the familiars and then introducing already some new characters that you'd be like, oh, we don't know their trajectory. So.
Dude, yeah. No. It looks like he's being very much more Voss than whoever he was in Orphan Black. Jackie Hearn's reminding us that it's Nacho in the chat is what he's called. But, dude, that to me has every hallmark of being the standout character from the series.
So I have two picks because I'm entitled. Totally. First one is Justin and Brian were treated to me live tweeting to the just live text messaging them as I watched a documentary. And
it was a two-person live tweet. We got like minute-by-minute coverage of Andrew watching this movie.
So, like, sometimes you know a bit of a backstory on something and you start to watch a documentary unfold and you're like, oh my God, they're missing this point. They're missing this part of it. Ah, this is driving me nuts. And you're angry. You're just like, this is an outrage. This is, why are they? And then in a really good documentary, they get to, but here's the thing. And then they start to tell you the thing that you were like, oh, cool. Oh, right on. So,
It was unreal, by the way, receiving these tweets where it's just like, ah, they're lionizing so-and-so. This guy doesn't result. Oh, no, wait, they're not lionizing. They set him up.
But there is one critical thing that never made it in there, which I'll point out. But anyhow, Print the Legend is on Netflix. I heard everybody rave about this documentary. I'm like, why do I need to watch a documentary of a 3D printer? I have a 3D printer. I actually have two more coming to me. You know, it's one of those like, what would I learn about this book about Star Wars?
Right, know? Right.
It is available for free if you are a Netflix subscriber, Print the Legend. It's a really, really, really interesting documentary. Talks about, you know, the whole rise of 3D printing, and it covers MakerBot. They talk about Form Labs. The kids behind Form Labs are kind of like the heroes of this thing because they're all like 20 or something, and they created an amazing company out of nowhere. It gets into the guy that made the 3D printed gun, and it's a very interesting overview of what's going on in 3D printing. And my only sort of tiny crit is that we don't get, you know, in particular when you look at additive printing, the ones that use the little the fused plastic, they don't tell you about really important point, which was RepRap. RepRap was the first sort of open source 3D printer, of which MakerBot and everything else is based on top of, and that was developed by the RepRap project was Dr. Adrian Boyer at Mechanical Engineering at University of Bath. To my understanding, he founded the RepRap project 10 years ago, and that every 3D printer you see today where plastic gets extruded from a little spool and builds things up is based basically on the work of RepRap, and they didn't talk about him at all, which I wish they had, but the current sort of state's interesting. A lot of coverage of Brie Patisse, who's sort of Bredis, who's, you know, kind of presented as sort of the almost like the father of this, but he's not. You know, he's been a very, very, very outspoken spokesperson for MakerBot, but just that part of it, not talking about Boyer and RepRap, was sort of like it was missing from, which is, I think, a very, very critical point. It's like talking about the PC industry and the computers and let's say 1984 and missing the very, very important critical period. But that said, this is a great documentary. Highly, highly, highly recommend Print the Legend. Gives you an idea of where things are, where they are as when this was coming out. And then if you're watching this and you're like, man, I want a 3D printing, sounds cool. I would like to play around a 3D. You know, I'd like to get involved in this or whatever. There's an application. There's an online program, which I played with before, but it wasn't the way that I was used to working on things. I use SketchUp all the time for building things. I love SketchUp. I learned how to do 3D design using SketchUp. And I was hesitant to try different tools. And I tried Tinkercad when it first came out, but I'm like, nah, it doesn't work the way I want to work it. And I gave up on it. But then I said, you know what? There's some things I want to make that SketchUp's maybe not ideally suited for, where Tinkercad's designed really from the ground up for making 3D objects. So I went back and played the Tinkercad for the last couple of days. It's very easy to get into. Go to tinkercad.com. It's free. It's online. You just go there and you can start doing stuff. There's some really easy tutorials. It's very you put a block down there. You grab a block. You put another block. And you can say make it a hole and it'll cut away from there, whatever. It's a very beginner accessible way to getting into understanding how things work. If you like Minecraft, if you like building things, go play with Tinkercad. And you can, within Tinkercad, you can design something and then you can take something from Tinkercad and you can actually send it to like one of like four or five different companies that will will produce whatever object you designed. They'll send you a quote, whatever it'll cost, and you can say print and have it shipped to you in a couple weeks' time. So that's kind of the cool state, is you don't even have to have a 3D printer. You can sit there and Tinkercad design something, and then once you see what you like, you can send it off to it. You can, within the app, you can tell them, print this for me. So incredible time, incredible
that's
age.
Rad. Dude, that's awesome. For the record, like, Penny has been on me to get a 3D printer in a big, big way, and I think this might be the first year where I shut the hell up and actually, I mean, don't tell her, your birthday is coming up, but it's like I might spend the bucks to actually get us a 3D printer.
Yeah, they've come a long, long, long ways, and what you can get for $500 is pretty amazing. I had a Solid Doodle press, which I had some problems with, so I sent it back. So I'm supposed to be getting another one soon, so hopefully we'll see how that works. And then I have another. I gave up on trying to repair my MakerBot. I looked at how much time I was spending trying to follow through their fixes and stuff like that. I'm like, it's too problematic. I don't know how the newer ones are. This was a replicator too, which was supposed to be that was disappointing for me. But I have another one coming right now, which is, let me see what I have coming. The MakerBot, they just got to the point where like, well, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And it's like, I give up. Let me see what's coming to me. I have just ordered the FlashForge 3D printer, so we'll see how that works.
Right on.
And it could be I'm totally inept, too.
Always a possibility, Andrew. Always a possibility.
Yeah, man. It's me and Justin. It's our first place we go is to assume we're inept.
Yep.
So gentlemen.
Beautiful. Beautiful freedom in that.
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.